stand by.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That with Jeff and Gretchen. Show number 53. Hey, Gretchen.
Hey, Jeff.
Happy Mother's Day. Can you say that to somebody who's not a mother? Is that completely inappropriate?
I have no idea how to respond to that since I'm not a mother. Happy Mother's Day to our mothers, though. There you go.
Don't I warrant a Happy Mother's Day back?
No. No, you do not. Just like you don't say Happy Yom Kippur to someone who's not Jewish.
Merry Mother's Day. Yeah. I've been doing that all day long, just to random people in the streets, getting weird looks.
Yeah, there you go.
I just like to share the merriment.
Oh, and it is such a merry day.
And the festivities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just wanted to tell the audience, if you hear some slurping like this, this is like the most perfect cup of coffee I've ever made. It's freshly roasted coffee of yesterday. There's a roaster four blocks from my house. French press. Pressed it today. Spectacular. And Gretchen won't even try it.
No interest. Sorry. Sorry. So I guess you can just swig your coffee and I could talk if you want.
Oh, it's so good. I can't even describe its goodness.
Wow.
It's multiple layers of depthly goodness.
So didn't you want to put a plug in for the people who ground it for you?
Coffee Company.
There you go.
Coffee Company on La Vista and Skillman in the beautiful Lakewood neighborhood of Dallas, Texas.
All right. There you go. Free plug for them.
Yeah. So did you talk to your mom today?
Yes, I did.
All right. I did mine too. She said, have a great podcast. Does your mom listen to the show?
Oh, that would be a big no.
Okay.
my mom and I don't see eye to eye politically in any way, shape, or form. That would not go over well. No.
My mom loves the show. Hi, Mom.
Well, I think your mom has similar political views to you.
Yeah, and she's also our only listener.
Oh, well, there you go. I think we had Mo from Brazil, too.
Yes, we did. Yeah. And by the way, Mo, listen, I apologize. I just saw your message in, I guess it was, Podcast Alley. He wrote a big, long message to us. He voted for our podcast.
Aww.
And had a big message. And anyway, I did not see it until like 2 days ago, literally. So I apologize for not acknowledging that. But thank you so much. And thank you for voting.
So speaking of good podcasts, do you want to hear who this one guy said had really good podcasts?
Like, yeah.
The best podcasts, according to him.
Don't make me blush.
Oh, unfortunately, he didn't name us, but he definitely said that there are six out there that everybody should listen to.
Really?
And he is kind of a guru. He founded podcastbunker.com, and he's been listening since 2004 when podcasts started.
What's his name?
Bruce Chanley.
I would have thought I would know the name because I've been around pretty early,
right,
too, but it doesn't ring a bell.
Well, anyhow, he thinks the best news podcast is the New York Times front page, which makes a lot of sense.
Okay, well, okay. Listen, I actually subscribe to that one,
uh-huh,
and I listen to it mostly at the gym.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good recap of the day's news, but it's not a very exciting to listen to podcast.
What makes
find it compelling. In fact, I find it a little bit dull.
What makes it different than just regular hearing the news on the radio when they're reading the news stories of the day? What makes it different than that?
Well, it's interesting. It's a good, really good question, because what I've noticed, and this actually makes a lot of sense to me, like the New York Times I subscribe to and The Economist I subscribe to. The
mm-hmm.
Economist does a weekly podcast.
Right.
And what both of these publications do is they kind of go talk about the headlines, but they more talk about the headlines and features to try to get you enough meat that it's standalone,
mm-hmm,
but also enough meat that says, hey, you may want to check out our latest issue because there's more in-depth stuff here this topic.
Uh-huh. That would make sense with The Economist for sure.
Definitely.
Since their
definitely
stories are so long and complicated.
Right. Now, they do give you enough that it's just worth a listen to anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with The New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally The New York Times has said, I've made a mental note, but it's really hard when I'm in the gym and I'm schlepping away, you know? It's like, make a mental note. That sounds like an interesting article that I should go listen to.
Right.
And then by the time, you know, I get back to my computer, mm-hmm, I kind of forget.
Oh. Okay. Well, I was just curious.
Yeah.
And then here are some of the other ones that he really liked. The best sports podcast are from two women, actually, called the Fanlu Girls. And you can check that out at fanlu.com.
Really?
The best tech podcast is This Week in Tech. You've probably heard of that
one.
Yeah,
that's huge.
Yeah. The best music podcast, he says, Jazz Corner Interviews.
Oh, that sounds intriguing to me. I'd like to check that out. I don't know it.
JazzCorner.com.
I love jazz. Okay.
The best travel podcast, Trends, Taste, and Travel.
Never heard of that one. See, I'm so out of it, too.
And the best offbeat podcast, Mysterious Universe,
where
they talk about the latest on UFOs, prophecies, and even Tasmanian tigers.
Oh, cool. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so he seems to be an expert on the industry. So
really? Okay. Well, I found something a little bit interesting. Do you know that there is a device that United States scientists are working on that you can wear on your head while you're sleeping, and it can squeeze the benefit of an 8-hour sleep into just 2 or 3 hours? And it does this by using a technique called transcranial magnetic stimulation, or to us in the know, it's called TMS. And it induces slow waves, which is indicative of the deepest phase of sleep and essential for learning ability and mood. But it sends these harmless magnetic signals through the scalp and skull into the brain, where it activates electrical impulses and, you know, then sends these like slow waves. They've done experiments on sleeping people, and they've shown that it seems to work.
Wow. So that means we could party on a Sunday night and you can get 2 hours of sleep with this new device and get to work fresh the next day.
Well, yeah. The research appears in an early edition of the American Journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And it's just a short little blurb here. But this is freaking huge. I mean, I cannot imagine anybody not wanting this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I would want it. I would love to like get 2 hours of quality sleep or 8 hours of 8 hours of quality sleep in 2 hours.
In 2 hours, yeah. Think how much more productive we'd be.
I could work that much more.
Yeah, right. No, I think we'd probably fill the time watching, TV or listening to podcasts.
Bring on more. Now I got time to watch Hero.
That's right. So, be careful what you wish for. Do we really need that?
Yeah, really.
What are we going to do with those extra 6 hours a day?
And what it doesn't say, too, is, you get the essential REMs or slow brain waves or whatever, but it probably doesn't stop you from being sleepy.
There you go.
You know? Uh-huh. I mean...
You're going to yawn for 6 hours.
Oh, I got to be awake. I don't need my sleep, but I'm freaking tired and I can't do anything else. I can't even watch Heroes.
I need lots more coffee.
Yeah, of this yummy goodness.
Oh, jeez. Well, do you want to get really mad? Because this is the story that everybody's talking about, that everybody's been really mad for the past 2 weeks.
Tell me.
The people that have heard this story, and I think just about everybody has at this point, because this is pretty unbelievable, and it's just coming to light right now because of the Freedom of Information Act.
Okay.
Even though it is 20 months old, here's the story. The U.S. government turned down almost $1 billion of aid from other countries for Katrina relief.
I heard something about that. I guess it was on Bill Maher, probably.
Well, the whole story, when it unfolds and when you actually hear all 10,000 pages pretty much condensed down into what happened,
yeah,
is presidential confidant Karen Hughes. Remember her?
Oh, yeah.
She went back to her ranch in Texas. And
yep.
She sent a cable from her State Department office to U.S. ambassadors worldwide right as Katrina was happening, like 2 days afterwards. And it's on September 7th, 2005. So 4 days afterwards. And she said, assure the scores of countries that had pledged or donated aid at the height of the disaster that they provided Americans with practical help and moral support, and highlight the concrete benefits hurricane victims are receiving. So basically tell them thanks, but no thanks. And U.S. diplomats figured it out otherwise, that the government was turning down their allies' offer of manpower, supplies, and expertise, and at the same time unable to even take care of their own citizens. So altogether, $854 million in cash and oil that was supposed to be sold for cash was turned down, and other supplies such as cell phones, medicine, cruise ships, even teams of a search and rescue people were turned down, or the money was never even collected. The U.S. taxpayers have paid to date $125 billion for Katrina relief, and yet we were offered all these countries came through. And I remember seeing, like, when CNN would have, they'd scroll through and they'd say, Greece has offered this, or so-and-so has offered that. Even Venezuela, who hates us, offered oil.
Right.
So every country, Kuwait offered the most. Kuwait offered like $100 million in cash and $400 million in oil. And to date, we haven't collected it or used it. They've actually turned their giving to private groups, like $25 million went to the Bush Clinton Katrina Fund and $25 million went to the Red Cross, because those were groups that could actually make a difference faster than the way they had offered it. So all this information is coming to light now because, as I mentioned, the Freedom of Information Act. But there's so much evidence that the whole system was so overwhelmed and we didn't know what to do. There's one prime example. Italy offered shipments of medicine, gauze, and medical supplies, and it sat in the elements and spoiled right after Katrina, and they didn't know what to do. So one State Department official says, just tell them we blew it. And the flip side was just dispose of it and not come clean. I could be persuaded to go either way. I mean, that's how awful it was. And it just goes on and on and on about every country. And the other one that was really bad was Greece offered two floating cruise ships that would...
Yeah, I heard about that one.
Right. But then, anyhow, the Greece ships supposedly couldn't make it in time. They couldn't get there before October 10th. So they were turned down. And instead, $250 million was paid to Carnival Cruise Lines. And lo and behold, isn't it amazing that Carnival contributed to Jeb Bush's reelection campaign in Florida? And they somehow got a contract for $250 million, but we couldn't manage to make the Greece free ships work, which is just pretty amazing. So the U.S. declined 54 of 77 recorded aid offers from its staunchest allies.
And yet, didn't some people get like a medal for their great work on Katrina? Like George Tenet getting the thing for the greatest talents.
God.
This administration... I mean, I'll say this right now. I don't know if it's Bush or if it's his, you know, if it's inner circle or whatever, but the acts are treasonous.
Well, I wanted to see what other people were thinking. Yeah. So this was all broken by the Washington Post at the very, very end of April. But I looked at the comments, and if you just look at the comments, there are pages and pages of comments. And overwhelmingly, the words used repeatedly again and again, inept, incompetent, utterly incompetent, arrogant, deception. Is anyone surprised? Outrageous, mind-numbing. Impeach, impeach, impeach. That came up repeatedly. Like, isn't this
impeachable? I'd like to see jail time. I mean, you know what's interesting is Bush has sort of got a acceptable, what is it, the acceptance percentage, the positive percentage is of 30% approval rate. Sorry,
He's at 28 now.
28. Okay, but it's kind of been around. It sort of doesn't go 30. Get much lower. And what's interesting to see what Bill Maher said. He said that is also the percent of Americans that believe Jesus is coming the second time in the next 5 years, and the world will end. That many people believe that. And is there a coincidence that those percentages are about the same?
Wow.
This is insanity. And I think, but the good news is the end is near. And I really think, I mean, I hope we elect a really, really smart, strong, good, decent person, Republican or Democrat. I really think we have a chance to make amends. Not for the lives lost in Katrina, not for the lives lost in the war. I think we have a chance to make amends in the world stage. I think the world needs a strong America.
Yeah, and the point is, after this, I mean, how can Democrats not get their act together? I mean, if we lose the election, it's going to be because it's been handed, the opportunity has been handed to us on a silver platter, and if we can't win it, you know.
Right, right.
This was probably the most interesting comment I read out of all the ones to this article. And it's very polarizing, and I really hate to read it, but it is pretty interesting. Vote Republican if you like seeing dead Americans floating in polluted floodwaters, blown to smithereens without body armor, shot by mentally ill people with a right to have guns, or mangled by domestic terrorism from white right-wing kooks of the Islamic and Christian faiths.
Wow. I would say, yeah, that's a tough one, but I would say keep it simple. Vote for Bush if you want incompetence at a senior level. I mean, it's incompetence. Could you imagine a corporation run by somebody that can't manage the execution of tasks?
But $125 billion of what we
consistently
pay, 20 months later, nothing's been rebuilt. You know, I was thinking, how long did it take to rebuild Germany after World War II? Wasn't it 2 years or 4 years at the most? And it's completely rebuilt after it was leveled.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nothing left of that country, and we rebuilt it. And here we are 20 months later, and you still see the ads for New Orleans, and you see, come to the French Quarter, but then you can't even pan around the city because it's just,
right.
it's still as
right.
devastated as it was 20 months ago. And mainly it's because this money is there, but nobody can decide how to spend it. And they finally passed one bill where they're actually, they have $66 million of money that they can actually use to rebuild libraries and laboratories and other facilities and schools. And they are just now getting around to figuring out how they're going to spend it.
So why is it allocated?
Because it's government and nobody can make a decision. And
but
then,
why is it that we were able to do such better things, you
know,
40 years ago?
I know.
And we can't do it now with all the amazing technology that we need. You know,
it should be easier now, shouldn't it?
Nobody wants government to run, you know, everything in our lives, but we need government where government can only be.
And this is the prime example.
And we haven't stepped up. No. We haven't been able to do those big things. We're a failing nation. It's embarrassing and it's sad.
It's embarrassing and it's depressing too.
It's depressing that we can't get together and do some of these big things that mean a lot to a lot of people. The worst part about all this, these countries coming to help for Katrina, I read someplace that somebody did an estimate that it could have saved lives.
Mm-hmm. All right, it could have saved lives. But that we were so arrogant that we turned it down. And then you want me to follow up with the second most blood-raising one?
As long as we're, it would be weird to go to something jolly and then go back to that.
Because here comes one because
I got jolly.
What just happened 2 weeks ago, all right? You know, the town of Kansas, Greensburg, Kansas was flattened, right?
Yeah.
Tornado came.
Yep.
It was completely predicted. So there were still lives lost, but, I mean, it was predicted. They knew it was coming, and now the governor of Kansas sounds the alarm to say, you know what, there aren't any National Guard troops, and there aren't any equipment to come help us, and we have to borrow from other states. Well, lo and behold, the Pentagon has finally acknowledged that the Army National Guard units have only 56% of their required equipment. Defense Secretary Robert Gates told the Senate that equipment levels are at the lowest since September 11th. Guess where all the equipment is, Jeff? Guess where all the troops and all the equipment is?
I wouldn't guess. I would say Korea. No. No, Iraq, obviously.
Yes, it's in Iraq. And so Bush's defense budget is asking for $22 billion for the Army National Guard over the next 5 years. That would take guard units up to 76% of their authorized equipment levels. They're normally equipped at about 75%. Lawmakers are arguing that repeated deployments to Iraq are causing shortages in equipment needed for domestic security and national disaster response. And this all came to head after Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius, Democrat, noted the shortfalls after tornado, you know, devastated Greensburg, Kansas.
Yeah.
And the Guard delayed the state's emergency response. And yet the Republican administration saying, no, that's not true. We asked her again and again and again. Do you need anything? Do you need anything? And supposedly the Kansas administration said, no, 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 we don't. So you don't know who to believe, but they are saying that after 4 years of war, there's no question that year after year, guard supplies are depleted, not just in Kansas, but all over the country. And the idea is states are supposed to share resources.
That makes sense.
If one state doesn't have it, they're supposed to borrow from another state.
Yep.
But experts are challenging that assertion because they're saying every state is running short, and all 50 governors have signed a complaint that they don't have enough equipment.
Okay.
So they need to buy 18,000 Humvees, 30,000 trucks, and the worst offender, 160 Chinook helicopters. Right now, there's nothing in the budget to do it. And just following that, guess what about the hurricane season for 2007? Guess what the prediction is? It's going to be very active. So for this year, hurricane season technically starts on June 1, and it goes through November 30th, and there are going to be 17 named storms in the Atlantic. And of those named storms, the probability of a hurricane making landfall along the U.S. coast is 74% compared to the last century average of 52%. So it's going to be, last year was a very calm year. 2005 and 2004 were very busy years. 2006 was calm. 2007 is supposed to be pretty hectic. And lo and behold, do we have the resources? No, we don't. It's very clear we don't. So all you people living along the Gulf, in the Gulf states, I would just say, you know, you better plan to take care of yourself because there's not a whole lot of stuff. And where
not
are you going to borrow
help
from?
Coming.
There's not a lot of help.
You know, you can almost feel it in this unstable Dallas weather. what's coming? I mean, we've had a month of the craziest, just instability.
Right.
As far as storm wise goes. Now, the one thing I did want to say about that, Gretchen, is I don't know this, but I suspect there's a lot of really, really smart, forward-looking people studying these things, looking at hurricanes, looking at the budget. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the chain,
somebody said something.
Somebody's making decisions of, we're not going to fund this. We know about it, but we're not going to fund it. Right? Yeah. Am I wrong about this? Somebody has got to be making those decisions. And that is where the fundamental problem lies.
Well, this article is pointing the finger back at Congress, that's saying that they have clearly not funded it. And now it's getting, I think, more people are talking about it. But you know what's going to happen. In the next 3 months, there's going to be some kind of devastation. People are going to die.
Aren't we tired of waiting?
I know. Why would we wait for this to happen?
We need government to be proactive. You know what? I'd agree with Republicans. If government is not proactive and it's not doing the job, then we don't need government anymore.
Because
we need government to plan and activate and budget and make it happen for us. Otherwise, yeah, we don't need government. Maybe this is a big plot by the Republicans and Libertarians to convince us that we don't need government just simply because it's so inept.
That's right. But, you know, when you see how much you pay in taxes and you think, God, I pay my share in taxes. I try not to cheat. I pay a lot of money. And yet I can't even think that if a tornado does come here to Texas, that anybody would ever be able to rescue me, because there's no equipment. There's no troops. There's no equipment. There's nothing surrounding us. Right. Kansas sure doesn't have anything.
You know, I have a friend of mine named Bruce who, that's not his real name, who works for the government here in Dallas. And he has made the observation that he's worked for the government for 25 years. Republican, Democratic administration doesn't really matter too much. Things get done. You have professionals in the different positions and within the government, and they do their job. And for the most part, they do it well. But the Bush administration and I remember he was preaching this a year after the Bush people came in. He said it was unbelievable that they were replacing really seasoned professionals at top levels and even middle management levels for people that didn't know anything.
Mm-hmm. I remember I heard that.
Now all this is coming up.
As long as they were Republican. And that's what they also sent.
And now all of this is now coming out. Mm-hmm. But my friend was telling me this within a year of Bush coming in. That was a fundamental flaw in this government, is that he put faith in people that he could trust or that supported him, or, you know, mm-hmm. instead of people that actually understood the business of running different programs within the government.
Well, that was true.
And hopefully we'll all learn something from this experience, that is a really a bad idea.
Well, that's true in Iraq, though, too. That all the people who were there to rebuild, the thinkers that were supposed to think, the only prerequisite was that they be Republican.
Yeah.
And how can you say they were like young people who hadn't traveled the world before, and yet they're going to go rebuild Iraq because they're a Republican?
It's so idiotic that it doesn't even make any sense to anybody that has a little bit of a brain, and that's what makes it so outrageous.
I know. But it is so polarizing, and it's a shame that it's polarizing, but I think it's gotten that way because
if you're a Republican that believes in low-cost government, conservatism, why wouldn't you be up and angry and yelling and saying Bush is not representative of what I believe as a conservative, mm-hmm. and we want better management?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand, and maybe at this point it's not happening anymore, but I didn't understand this 2 years ago with conservative friends of mine would still back Bush when it was clearly that this government is inept.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I know I'm more liberal, but if I was a conservative, I would hate this government as trying to indicate that it's reflective of what my beliefs are.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
So I don't have any other really blood-boiling stories today. That was it. But those two are enough because it's been all over the news, and it's very it's so disturbing.
Once this gets out, the phones are going to light up.
That's much lighter.
Well, I have something light. Mm-hmm. I went to the Taste of Addison last night. Did you go this weekend at all?
No.
Okay.
I chose to pass on that one.
You know, I have to say, I was kind of looking forward to it. It was not that good. Two problems fundamental with it was, first of all, way too many people. So one of the great things about a taste of whatever, insert city here, is that you can really sample a lot of foods.
Right.
They had a lot of different foods. First of all, Addison is not exactly a food capital of the world. So, you know, it's a little bit flawed already. But, you know, they had some restaurants there, so it's kind of fun. But every restaurant, no matter where you went, had this huge line.
Wow.
So it was really unfun.
So they got a really bigger turnout than they expected. But
well,
then they
I don't
sold
know.
Tickets.
Yeah, they sold tickets. I don't know if it was designed. That's what I was wondering. Was it designed to be this? Because to me, it took all the fun away from it.
Right. If you have to wait in a long line to get a
kebab. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I remember going to the jazz festival in Denton last year. And while it wasn't a food festival, it was a jazz festival. Of course, they have lots of food. You could get your funnel cake. You could get your kebabs. You could get your sausage on a stick. All this stuff really fast. It was fun.
Right.
And then go see some really cool music. So the other funny thing I thought is that we saw two bands that played. And it was just packed. It was so packed that we couldn't even get close to them. And they're bands I never even heard of. One was called Dougherty. Apparently, he was an American Idol guy. And he had a very nice voice. I didn't really care for the songs too much. And then there was a band called Lifehouse. Now, Lifehouse, I had heard three of their songs before. In fact, and you probably have heard of them too, but it didn't mean anything to me. And I had the observation about Lifehouse that's kind of interesting. These guys, they look like rockers. The lead singer looked broody and serious and kind of cool, you know. They had the acoustic guitar going. The electric guitar guy looked cool. The drummer was, you know, tough and... They just looked great, and the music was very, very professional. The only thing I can think of is that it was all very professional. If you were to draw a picture of an alternative slash pop band of 2007, and you draw how they looked, and you draw what the songs were like, it's exactly what you'd get. And it just dawned on me, like, this is such an amalgamation of probably 10 bands that I could tell you in the last 2 years. And yet it's good. I can't complain. The lead singer was great voice. They had a great presence. They were all good musicians. Like I said, very well done. But so somehow, where's the excitement of new music? There's no excitement of music in this concert. And I'm sure they've got a lot of fans. I'm sure they've got probably mostly younger. But I just thought, wow. Either I'm getting old and jaded, but I recognize they're very good. It just was nothing that sort of made me think, wow, this is the next something. And I just thought, okay, nobody will know of them in 10 years.
Maybe it's
they make nice music.
Right.
They do.
I've heard comments to the effect that there's too much homogenous bands
it's
of the same
very
kind.
Homogenous.
So you've got 18 bands out there that all sound the same.
Yeah.
Like you're saying, sort of formulaic.
Yeah, very formulaic. Very formulaic. I could have written one of their songs.
But it's the formula
it's
for
good.
Right now. It's what's popular right now.
Right.
And so I think to be a breakout band, isn't it typically the formula is not what you hear right now?
That's,
either it's a unique
that's
voice.
That's what's interesting.
Right. And if there isn't, that's. But then again, they're not going to be. That kind of person is probably not playing at the Taste of Addison.
I was just. Right.
With
a Taste of Addison with an exclamation point. You want to get the. The bands that are popular now or whatever that maybe are kind of generic. So mom and dad and grandma and grandpa and the kids can all kind of go because it's kind of harmless because this music was really kind of harmless.
Right. The breakout bands are probably in some hole-in-the-wall place in West Hollywood or some place in New York City. They're going to be somewhere or like where grunge came out of the Northwest. You know, they're going to be... somewhere but Addison. So maybe you went with higher expectations than you should have. Maybe that's the bottom line.
Well, I don't know if I came in with higher. I didn't actually come in with expectations, but no, it's a fair point. I was so awed by their professionalism, and it was like watching very good craftsmen. They were good at what they did, but yet what they did wasn't very fair to music.
Oh.
It was like, sort of like, take this talent that you clearly have. And do something with it. Innovate.
Well, maybe they will once they...
Maybe they will.
Maybe they will. Maybe they have to do this to get signed. And then once they get signed and they get a following, then they can try something different.
Right.
Like their third album can be the breakout album.
Right. But no one will buy it.
Everybody will complain, but it was artistically great.
That's
except
right.
you. You'll buy that one, Jeff.
That's right. Exactly. Except I don't buy albums anymore. Who does? That's so old.
That's right. You have download your iPod,
just
right?
Download whatever on your iPod, yeah. Hey, did you see that George Lucas announces two more Star Wars movies? This is serious. He's not done with Star Wars, and he's going to make two more live-action Star Wars films. But they're saying the movies will be like an hour in length and they'll be made for television. So
really?
It's weird, huh?
That is bizarre.
Yeah.
Because I thought that last one was definitely, you know, the end.
I haven't seen any of them since the first one. I'm such a non Star Trek guy or Star Wars guy or whatever.
Star Trek, Star Wars.
Whatever, star thing. Just not so not into it. And then Spider-Man has been doing so well. And mm-hmm. The reviews I heard of the movie are actually very mixed. But yet it is... And did you see this? They put the it's been the most expensive to make movie ever.
Right.
And so
but
far,
it's already made
so far the box is
back.
Saying,
right.
Well, it's made its money back, but not yet to the gross is more than what they put into it. But apparently, only half of the gross goes back to the studio. So, but they do say that it'll make
money.
Yep. So if that's true, there's no doubt that there will be a number four.
Oh yeah.
And do we really need a Spider-Man number four? I just think this stuff is so ridiculous. I really do. And then what, a month and a half from now, the Pirates of Caribbean are going to come out with number three and
or number four.
This stuff or number four. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't remember which one they're on either.
I mean, and those I like those movies, but I mean, come on.
But remember, I talked about
it's kind of like kind of like Lifehouse. You know, Lifehouse is basically Stone Temple Pilots part 12. I mean, that's the same thing.
But we did talk about that before, why they do the sequels.
Well, it makes money, right?
The sequels make more money, and there's less risk than starting
right.
from scratch with an untried franchise.
Right, right.
But speaking of space and Spider-Man, have you heard of Virgin Galactic?
A Virgin Galactic Virgin?
No, Virgin Galactic.
No,
Virgin Galactic is...
Is it a Virgin company part of...
It is part of Richard Branson's empire.
Yeah.
So, if you've got an extra $200,000 and you don't know what to do with it...
I was just wondering that the other day. What am I going to do with this extra $200,000?
You can take a quick jaunt into Earth's atmosphere for several minutes of zero gravity weightlessness.
I got news for you. I am in Earth's atmosphere.
But zero gravity weightlessness.
Oh, zero gravity. Okay.
So guess who signed up to do it?
I saw Stephen Hawking. I saw him.
No, well, that was different.
That was different.
He didn't actually go into space. He was actually orbiting in a plane.
Okay.
He was allowed to feel the simulation of space effects by the Zero Gravity Corporation. However, this is actually going out of our atmosphere.
Okay.
And the people who have signed up so far are Victoria Principal, formerly of the TV show Dallas and now the skincare entrepreneur. She's 57 years old. Remember her? She was Pam Ewing.
I remember the name.
Ewing, okay. She's wondering what color her spacesuit's going to be, by the way.
Yeah.
And
that's important.
The tie-in to Spider-Man, Hollywood director Bryan Singer.
Mm.
He got the idea of doing it while he was planning one of his scenes for Superman Returns. Oh, for Superman Returns. I'm sorry, not Spider-Man Returns. But he's in the movie biz. So they've got a ton of people right now, scientists, entrepreneurs, business people, and people who have a vision of always wanting to go into space,
according to the president
of Virgin Galactic.
You're basically leaving the atmosphere. Is that right?
Yeah, you got 200 people who have signed up for a 2.5-hour suborbital flight aboard an 8-seat spacecraft, and they're going to start flying in 2009.
Wow.
People so far have put down $21 million in deposits. The first 100 people have to pay $200,000 up front. The rest will put down $20,000. And you may have heard last month, Charles Simonyi, the software pioneer from Microsoft, he paid $20 million to go on the space station. And remember Martha Stewart, his friend, brought them all quail, which was really kind of sweet for their lunch. Virgin is going to offer 2 space flights a day, and it's going to ultimately appeal to a broader audience. It's going to become the first commercial space line, but it does have some competition.
Wow, that's cool.
Rocket Plane out of Oklahoma is going to start their suborbital flights also in 2009.
I still don't quite understand what it's suborbital. What does that mean?
Here, I'll tell you more information about that in a minute. But it's going to be, these planes are going to be banned by Burt Rutan's company, Scaled Composites. And they're going to fly initially from California and then New Mexico. So that's where you're going to go to get them. They're going to have 5 spaceships.
Who's building the spaceships?
Burt Rutan's company, Scaled Composites.
Okay.
6 passengers, 2 pilots on each one. The spaceship is attached to the belly of a jet carrier. It carries it like a regular plane and releases it at 50,000 feet.
Okay.
Then a rocket ignites and hurls the ship towards space at 3,000 miles per hour. It peaks at 400,000 feet. The passengers experience 4 to 5 minutes of weightlessness, and they can actually do a somersault in the cabin.
Okay.
So we want them to leave their seats and look out different windows. And then it's going to glide back to Earth for a landing. So that's what you get to do for $200,000.
You know, I don't know why it does. I mean, I wouldn't mind that experience, but it's not that big of a deal to me. It's not like, wow, it sounds like greatness. I don't know.
Well, Virgin is offering 2 free flights because lots of celebrities have contacted them wanting to go. But the 2 that they're going to give away is one is Stephen Hawking, who just, as you mentioned last couple weeks ago, actually got to experience weightlessness.
But as you said, he was just in an airplane. They just did a deep dive or something, right?
Right, yeah. And the other one is going to be scientist James Lovelock, who his theory is Earth is a living, self-regulating organism. And the other person who's going to get to go, which is pretty amazing, is French designer Philippe Starck, who is advising on their logo space suits, and he's designing the interior of the cabin. So for his work, he gets to ride. I thought that was really pretty
funny.
Cute.
That is funny. So you know, in preparation for space, NASA has always had these chambers where you can go experience zero gravity. So wouldn't that be cheaper?
I don't know.
I mean, if you want that experience
I guess
of somersaulting,
yeah.
And I would recommend scuba diving. It's not exactly zero gravity, but it kind of feels like it.
Wow. Well, less than $200,000.
Yeah.
I bet you the price will fall, though. Once the competition comes out and there are going to be 3 companies competing,
yeah.
I bet after that first probably 2 years or so, and people really want to do it, I bet the price comes down dramatically. You know, just like flat screen TVs.
Right. But I wonder how much of a demand there is for that, though. I just don't know.
It's got to be a special.
It sounds like a nice, if I was at an amusement park and they had this ride and I would go on it. Sounds kind of fun.
Right.
But
right.
200,000 or 100,000 or 50,000 for 5 minutes of somersaults? I don't know.
Small group of people and only the last 40 years have ever done anything
like
this.
So you can come back and be the big man. In your neighborhood and say, look what I did, and then you have sex. So that's what it all comes down to, is man's desire to procreate. Or not to procreate, to have fun.
To recreate.
To recreate.
Recreation.
Yeah. Hey, baby, I've been to space.
Ooh. Ooh, get me hot.
Would that work on you? I mean, it's indicative of having a large... wallet.
Of course it is. Yes, there you go.
Speaking of wallets.
Yeah.
This doesn't tie in at all, but there is a report, and this really surprised me. You'll appreciate this, Gretchen, that there's very few of us in America that are eating enough fruits and vegetables.
Uh-oh.
Did you know that? In fact, fewer than a third of us actually eat the amount that the government recommends. The government's goal for this, Gretchen, is to get 75% of Americans to eat 2 servings of fruit and 3 servings of vegetables by 2010. And that's their goal, to get 75% of us to do that. We're not even close to that right now. It seems that, but I have some interesting statistics on this. Senior citizens are more likely than others to eat more vegetables. So old people eat more vegetables. And the younger Americans, ages 18 to 24, eat the fewest vegetables. So those of us in like middle age, between those two things.
Even potatoes? Even because that's the number one vegetable, because they're fried.
Well, I don't know if they go into French fries. I don't know. That doesn't say here. That's
they're
interesting.
They're not counting
French
fries as part of that 18 to 24-year-old.
I hope. Well, you know, they're probably not. Otherwise, they probably eat the most French fries. Nearly 4/5 of the age category scraped the veggies to the side of their plates if they had vegetables at all in the young. Now, also with fruits, seniors also eat more fruits, again, just like vegetables. But this is what's interesting, is the young people eat also the second amount of fruit.
And the then second highest amount of fruit?
Second highest, sorry. And people our age actually eat the smallest amount of fruit. So that's kind of interesting.
And that's amazing because, you know, we have to know better.
Yeah.
You absolutely have to know better.
Now, my theory about the fruit, though, is, you know, if you go to the vegetable, you go to a normal grocery store and get fruit, you know what? Not that good. I mean, let's face it. Fruit is such a explosion of taste sensations, kind of like my coffee.
Yes.
When you get it organic from a farm or you find it, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's
really
so
fresh.
Great when it's fresh, and it's so kind of blasé.
When it's not.
When it's from a grocery store and it's full of all kinds of junk to make it look colorful and look, you know. So I really think that in order to eat more vegetables and fruits, we probably need to go back and get more natural, not just because it's healthy, but just because it tastes so much better.
Well, also because of the obesity epidemic, it's obvious that people aren't eating fruits and vegetables because, what, 3/4 of Americans are obese?
Right.
So if 3/4 of Americans are obese, it's not because they're ODing on too many apples and bananas every day.
Exactly.
Oh my God, I had too many apples today.
Oh my God. Well, and this is the other interesting thing is, you know, of all the ethnic groups in America, you know who eats the most fruit?
I would say...
Think of picking the fruit.
I was wondering about that. I honest to God was wondering that. Hispanics?
The Hispanics. But interestingly enough, they also are the ethnic group that eat the fewest vegetables.
So they eat fruit, but not vegetables.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I'm sure there's some cultural things for that. Now,
when you think about what that menu is, think about it. They never present you with vegetable.
Yeah.
Rarely.
Yeah, yeah.
It's meat and starches.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Now, whites actually, we eat the fewest fruits, which is kind of surprising because fruit is so wonderful.
But only if it's good.
But we eat the most vegetables of the ethnic groups. So I don't know what the reason for that is, but I just thought that was interesting.
That is really interesting.
It's an interesting conclusion. So anyways, my summary of all this is that everybody listening should eat more fruits and vegetables. I try. I'm not eating three servings of vegetables and 2 servings of fruit isn't awful aggressive because we only eat 3 meals a day. It's really hard to get all that in. I mean.
But they're talking about cups, you know, like
small
a little
things,
cup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I probably have like 5 servings of spinach at lunch because I have this big thing of spinach.
Yeah, so you're probably getting 3 or something but not realizing it. Peace is our toy. Nails is good to eat up and enjoy. Eat vegetables. Eat them right now. Eat vegetables. I'll show you. But you know what's happening? One of the things that is going to contribute to that, well, maybe not. Maybe it's not as bad as I thought, because you probably heard that 1/4 of the country's 2.4 million bee colonies have been wiped out.
It's huge.
You heard that?
Yeah.
The national group that tracks this thing cannot figure out what is going on with the bees. Tens of billions of bees have disappeared. It's like a giant mystery. Now, why anybody would be concerned about this, especially after that last story?
Because they pollinate.
They pollinate 90 of the tastiest flowering crops we have, including apples, nuts, avocados, soybeans, asparagus, broccoli, celery, and cucumbers. And citrus fruit, peaches, kiwi, cherries, blueberries, cranberries, strawberries, and
I don't want
melons.
That stuff to go away, Gretchen. I want it 5 years from now.
But apparently, as according to your last story, nobody eats it anyhow, which is so disturbing. 1/3 of the human diet comes from insect-pollinated plants, and the honeybee is responsible for 80% of that pollination. And think about this, all you meat eaters. Even cattle, which feed on alfalfa, depend on bees for pollination of
That's
alfalfa.
Right. Meat eaters, we're not excluded from this bee problem.
So the USDA is actually saying this is the biggest threat to our food supply right now. It's not bioterrorism, or it's not, you know, what's going on with, you know, drugs from China getting into our pet supply or our food supply, like cattle feed and chicken feed. It's actually the fact that we're losing bees. The past few months, 1/4 of colonies have disappeared, and scientists call it colony collapse disorder. It started in November, so this has been really, really recent that this has been going on, and it's spread to 27 states, and it's also been reported in Brazil, Canada, and Europe. They're actually thinking that it could be some kind of parasite or a disease among the honeybees. And
do we have scientists and people that are focused on this problem? Is there an understanding that it is as big as...
Absolutely. Actually, a congressional study said that honeybees add $15 billion a year to the value of food in the food supply chain. And the Agricultural Department and the USDA are really working on trying to figure out what's going on here. But it is really pretty scary to think. But actually, according to your story, though, it's not as big a deal because we don't eat enough anyhow.
Well, but it's...
But if it's just a taste of things to come, literally.
Yeah. Search the streets for old friends, met only strangers, none who remember, none who would take me home.
I miss the bees. I miss the honey.
I miss the... Well, Gretchen, I've got a demographic study. It's called The Realignment of America. And it's kind of interesting. This guy is, he's kind of looking at it for political purposes, but he's sort of saying he was in kindergarten Detroit when he was young. The city had a population of about 1.8 million. Today, Detroit has 886,000, less than half as many. But of course, the U.S. has been growing, and he's kind of speculating about this. He did a comparison between the years of 2000 and 2006, so just, you know, the most recent sort of census data. And basically, he's split this America up into four different regions. The first region is what he calls coastal megalopolises.
And, see if he can say that.
I know. And they include New York, L.A., San Francisco, San Diego, Chicago, because he says it's on the coast of Lake Michigan, Miami, Washington, and Boston. And here is a pattern that you don't find in other big cities. Americans are actually moving out and immigrants are moving in large numbers. So L.A., for example, had a domestic outflow of 6% in 6 years, balanced by an immigrant inflow of 6%. And these numbers are the same for all of those metropolitan areas that he mentioned. With some variation, New York had a domestic outflow of 8% and an immigrant inflow of 6%. San Francisco had a domestic outflow of 10%, partially due to the tech bubble burst, and an immigrant inflow of 7%. So that's kind of interesting. So actually, our big cities are getting, people are actually moving out of the big cities, which is kind of counterintuitive to what we normally think. Let's see, Americans are moving out, not into coastals. California and South Florida, and in very large numbers are moving out of our largest metropolitan areas. Some reasons that he cites here is that high housing costs, high taxes, and a distaste in some cases for the burgeoning immigrant populations. Mm. And in fact, he makes a mention that a lot of our big cities now, we're almost seeing like third world type of division of cultures. You've got the rich that are sort of seeing their housing values rise and rise and rise at extraordinary rates. And then these immigrants that are coming in and doing the lawns and so forth and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of have two-tiered societies. So the second one is what he calls interior boom towns. None of them touch the Atlantic or the Pacific. And their population has grown 18% in 6 years. They've had considerable immigrant inflow, 4%. But with the exceptions of Dallas and Houston, this immigrant inflow has been dwarfed by a much larger domestic inflow. So people, Americans, have been moving to
those
cities.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Las Vegas, the Inland Empire. Have you ever heard that term,
no,
Inland Empire?
Absolutely.
Oh, you have.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Riverside,
really,
San Bernardino County.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so funny. It sounds so sexy when the newscaster or the weather forecaster, you know, in L.A. will say, and the Inland Empire today. And you look at
really?
It, and it's like, oh, my God, it's San Bernardino and Riverside. And
right,
it's
right.
It's like, oh, so not empire-ish at all.
Know,
Inland, yes. Hot, yes.
But they're getting a lot of immigrants. And actually, a lot of people from the United States who are actually coming from L.A. and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, yeah. Because I guess it's a lot cheaper, probably.
Yeah, it's very cheap, but it's far, far away. My God, to get there, you can just drive and drive
and drive. I know. Mm-hmm. Orlando and Charlotte are included in this list. Phoenix, 12% inflow into Phoenix, 10% in Tampa, 9% in Jacksonville. Atlanta, and yeah. So basically, he also makes the point that the nation's center of gravity is shifting. Dallas is included in one of these. Dallas is now larger than San Francisco, for example. Never was
mm-hmm.
before. Houston is now larger than Detroit. Atlanta is now larger than Boston. It goes on and on. So the third category is the old Rust Belt.
Mm.
And these cities would be really six metro areas: Detroit, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Buffalo, and Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
They have lost population since 2000.
Right.
They're getting a little bit of, well, the domestic outflow is 4%, but only an immigrant inflow of 1%.
Hmm.
So even the immigrants aren't really going there in hordes. So those things are actually continuing to lose. And then the fourth category he's got is called static cities. And these are at 18 metropolitan areas where immigrant inflow is between 0 and 4, and domestic inflow is up to 3, and domestic outflow is no more than 1%. In other words, in summary, they're kind of keeping
stable.
Fairly stable. And cities that would be included in this include like Philadelphia, Baltimore, Hartford, Providence, Those are in the east. Some western cities include Seattle, Denver, Portland. In the Midwest, Minneapolis, St. Louis, Cincinnati, Kansas City, Columbus, and Indianapolis. So anyway, the point is he's what he's trying to do is capture sort of a quick view of demographic changes in America, and we are moving away from the coasts and into sort of the south.
Right.
And probably cheaper cities. I mean, it kind of makes some sense. I mean, you know, I will admit to the or I'll say to our audience, I'm losing my job at the end of May, and I've been looking around for work and thinking a lot about where to live, if Dallas is going to be in my future or other places might be, because so far a lot of the opportunities that have been opened up to me are in other places in the country. And so I've been thinking a lot about it lately, and you know, places like Dallas and Phoenix and Atlanta and Denver and some of these cities are more attractive in a lot of cases than the Bay Area or LA, simply because they're so much more affordable. And I can see people making decisions to get rid of to get out of some of these places.
Right.
And anyway, it's all very interesting.
Well, I have something that just feeds on that too. You want to know what Relocate America has named as the top 10 best places to live in 2007?
I don't know. I've got a list too, but okay, well, let's see if they match.
Yeah, let's see if they match. This is data including education, employment, economic indicators, recreation, and housing. So this website, Relocate America, or whatever this is, puts this vote out every year. And this year, they came up with, and this sort of does follow along with what you're saying, only two big cities are on their top 10 list.
Yep.
Number one is Asheville, North Carolina. Okay. Number two is Traverse City, Michigan. Ithaca, New York. Chicago, Illinois.
Wow, Chicago.
Cary, North Carolina. Portland, Maine. San Francisco. Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Oh, my Lord.
Wow.
Oh,
come on.
I'm sorry.
How do you compare San Francisco and Stevens Point?
O'Fallon, Missouri, and Spencer, Illinois. And
Stevens. Well, come on.
I
don't even know where Spencer, Illinois is, and I grew up in Illinois.
But then also when you look at what's on the rest of the list, it tends to make me question it because Wheeling, West Virginia is on the list. Okay, come on. If you've ever been through Wheeling, West Virginia, you pretty much just keep on driving. Surprise, Arizona and Sierra Vista, Arizona are on the list.
Oh, come on.
Dallas is not. Pittsburgh is. It's just really pretty interesting, the cities that made the list. So you just sort of have to wonder how.
Well, I've got another list.
All right. Okay. What's your list say?
Mine is from a book that just came out called Cities Ranked and Rated, more than 400 metro areas evaluated in the U.S. and Canada. And they're, I don't know. I don't even know all the criteria that they're looking at. But number one in my list.
Was what?
Is
not Asheville, North Carolina?
Gainesville, Florida.
Okay.
Two is Bellingham, Washington. Three is Portland, Oregon. Not Portland, Maine like yours. Four is Colorado Springs. Five is Ann Arbor. Six is Ogden, Clearfield, Utah. Seven is Asheville. Eight is Fort Collins, Loveland, Colorado. Nine is St. Louis Obispo, Paso Robles, California. Uh-huh. 10 is Boise City, Idaho. Should I go through the 100?
No.
Okay, no. So, but interestingly about this list is, what is it? Quite a number of the top, like 50 are actually college towns. So I think they put a lot of emphasis on culture and education.
Right.
And, but I've got, Dallas came in at like number 134. 133, and Fort Worth came in at 134. Higher-ranked Texas cities are San Antonio is the highest-ranked, 51. Well, I'm sorry. I would much rather live in Dallas than San Antonio. So, you know, there's some things in here that don't make sense. Abilene is 55. Come on. Gretchen, would you move to Abilene over Dallas?
I have been to Abilene. Oh, my Lord. They didn't even have a Starbucks when I was there. Not even one. And now they have one. I have heard that firsthand. They have one.
And, oh wow. Lord. And Austin is number 100. Okay, Austin. You know, that's everyone seems to like Austin. So, but, you know, I think Dallas gets knocked, as they said, because a lot of big cities aren't on this list because they get knocked. This particular list really weighs crime pretty heavily, apparently. But what's interesting is I looked at, well, where the heck is Phoenix?
Yeah.
I was out in Phoenix. And Phoenix is number 330. I mean, that's kind of amazing, really.
I wonder if it had to do with the 106-degree temperature there this week.
I know. Well, here's more on Dallas here about this thing. Okay, here's what they kind of said. Dallas is great for employment and career growth, particularly in the corporate world. And it kind of puts down Dallas for being in the middle of nowhere. But you know, if you look at employment and career growth, and cheap housing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Cheap pretty housing. Potent, you know, thing.
That means you can be employed and afford a house here.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's what a lot of people want.
That's right.
And I have, as I said, I've been stepping up, looking around the country. Dallas is a lot more cultural than a lot of places. This is really amazing. We got it pretty good here, Gretchen. And I know enough.
Well,
I quite appreciate it.
Because we have two of everything, remember?
Yeah. Well, here's the interesting. Dallas makes a top 10 cities for the most romantic for baby boomers. Isn't that a weird criteria, first of all? I don't know what that means.
What does that mean?
I don't know exactly. But it's number 9. But it doesn't even appear in the top 10 for dating or the number of singles. So, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. I don't know what that means. And what else do we have here? Dallas ranks number 21 for the most restful sleep. Don't know why. Number 1, Orange County. So I don't know what the heck is that. But this contradicts exactly with this next one. We're number 7 in worst places for respiratory infections. Probably because of all the allergies.
The ozone, right?
I don't know. Yeah. Ozone, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably in the summer. Number 10 is, we're number 10 for stress. So
here,
how can
we're
we,
number 10 for stress?
How can we be number 10 for stress and number 21 for most restful sleep?
I was going to say, this is a very stress-free place to live, in my opinion, and I've lived all over.
Well, but I think I think compared to other big cities, I'm sure that's true, but you know, I got to remember we're being compared with a lot of smaller cities as well.
Oh,
you know,
it could be.
So, anyways, that was interesting. That's that study. So, you know, there's so many of these best city studies coming out, and it's hard to evaluate which one is best. Well, Gretchen, we're running out of time.
Ooh.
I know.
Who knows where you will end up?
I hope I end up in Dallas. The more and more I think about it, the more I want to stay here.
Well,
so, and I've picked some cities where I think would be acceptable for me. They would include places like Atlanta and Denver and Dallas and maybe, you know, San Francisco or LA, but those are pretty expensive. But I like that. I really like Dallas for all the combination of things. And it's an amazingly more cultured place than a lot of people think. Yes, it is in the middle of nowhere, but one of the positives cited in that study also is we have a great transportation system. DFW Airport is in the middle of the country. We have good highways.
Love Fields right around the corner.
Love Fields right around, especially from you.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody stay tuned and we'll see where Jeff ends up.
Yeah. No matter where I end up, we'll be podcasting from there.
Oh. Yeah, there you go.
From Abilene.
I'm not going to Phoenix, okay? I'm not going to be podcasting from Phoenix. Yeah, from Abilene. I can see you in Abilene.
Yeah. All right.
All righty. Well, until 54.
Yep. Until 54. We'll see you.
Bye.
Bye.